back in early 2011, the Rock Springs BLM was interested in just documenting the baseline movement and distribution patterns of deer just east of Rock Springs. And so when I was contracted to do that work, I originally thought it was going to be a pretty easy study because the conventional wisdom was that all these deer resided in the desert year-round. In January 2011, we went out there and we captured 40 mule deer, put these GPS collars on them that collect locations every 3 hours. But the catch here was that these GPS collars were what we call store-on-board units. That means you don't get the data back until you get the collar back. So as you might imagine, when that spring of 2011 rolled around, we went out with the fixed wing to locate and check these animals. We couldn't find most of them. It took a lot of head scratching and a whole lot of flying to figure out where these animals were going. And of course, it turns out they were moving more than 150 miles up to the Hoback Basin.
What makes it important that these deer migrate, or what makes this migration special?
Well, yeah, there's a couple cool things about it. I mean, not only is it the longest mule deer migration ever recorded, but what's, I think, particularly unique about it is that it occurs exclusively outside any protected areas. No national parks, no refuges. This landscape is a multiple-use landscape, and there's not many areas left where a migration like that could exist outside of protected areas.
And so you conducted a migration assessment for this migration route, basically looking at obstacles to the animal's path, threats to their migration route. What did you find? What were some of the key things that you observed there?
The obvious things are the physical barriers, like you mentioned, the fences, the roads. Across this route, they cross more than 100 different fences, 3 to 5 different highways, depending on how far they migrate. The second and more complicated sort of uncertainty or potential risk with the migration is the complex land ownership patterns. And this creates a lot of uncertainty in how those lands will be managed into the future.
And Joe, I wanted to turn to you for a moment. Obviously, part of your role here is making all of this information about this migration accessible to the public so that, the layperson can understand what's going on. What has your process been like trying to document this migration photographically?
Well, at the beginning, it was pretty difficult. Just because when deer are migrating, sometimes they don't look like they're migrating. They're kind of spread out and they filter through the landscape. They're not like pronghorn who look like a school of fish, you know. So for me to show in pictures and video deer migrating took some time. And my first fall migration period, which was in 2012, I pretty much got skunked. I didn't get very much good material then, but I started to figure out exactly where I should be putting my camera traps. And then this past fall of 2013 is when I got my good material. And for the most part, I did video cameras that were silent. So the deer didn't actually know they were being filmed.
And so this is basically you setting up a camera and then leaving it there and letting it record as the deer go through.
Yeah, exactly. If I were to be sitting in any of these places or hanging out there, they know I'm there before I see them. So that was the best tool for me is to use a camera trap so I don't disturb them, and I also get the type of footage that we needed to get for the project.
You know, Joe plays off this photo trapping stuff like, you know, we just go out there and his magic happens. But I want to brag a little bit for Joe and just talk about how difficult it is to get the images and the videos he's getting. Joe and I spent 5 days backpacking an enormous amount of camera equipment, and we came away with about 10 seconds of video.
Wow. What did you learn about the deer through getting this footage? I mean, what surprised you about them and this migration route?
Well, that's a great question because I thought I knew everything about deer. I mean, I grew up hunting them. But I mean, probably the most interesting thing for me was to check the cameras and see that they vocalize so much. I mean, they're talking to each other. I mean, it seems like they're talking to each other the entire trip, especially at these little bottlenecks, which is pretty neat to see in here.
So I guess for both of you, you've spent a lot of time documenting this migration, studying this migration. What's the takeaway from it, and what do you hope the general public will come to know about it?
Well, I think for me, just because of the fact that people see mule deer in people's backyards or golf courses or other suburban habitats, there's this impression, or it's often assumed, that mule deer are plentiful, they don't need a lot of management, or they can just take care of themselves. But in fact, these sort of backyard deer populations are just a drop in the bucket of our overall deer populations. The vast, vast majority of mule deer are migratory. So if we want to continue to enjoy the herds and numbers of animals that we have, we need to take care of these migration routes.
We've been talking with Hall Sawyer, who's a research biologist at Western Ecosystems Technology, and Joe Reese, who is a wildlife photographer. Thank you both so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Willow.